the last two chaburas, we spent a lot of time on the sugya that goes from an Aleph to a Beis, from a Ches and Aleph to a Ches and a Beis, about Jewish participation in a Bishul, and when is there enough Jewish participation at the beginning, at the end. We saw it seems to be perhaps a machlokas within the sugya that the Rambam may be taking a stand on, and that may answer a lot of mysteries. Sif Yud Aleph is an unrelated din. It's not really about necessarily about the issue of Jewish participation per se, but it is another important issue that flows from that sugya, because over the course of the discussion about Jews and non-Jews doing bishul together, and quoted a brisa that went from the bottom of a mouth to the top of a base, maniach Yisrael, a Jew could leave meat on the grill or a pot on the stove, and with a non-Jew in charge. The Jew puts it on, and leaves the non-Jew. The Jew is going to Jewish man. The examples that have been given: Jewish man going to the Beis Meresh, Beis HaKnesses. A Jewish woman going to the Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMeresh. She's coming back. And meanwhile, the Nachri or Nachris is tending the grill, tending the stove, and not a concern. So not a concern in what sense? So within the context of Sugya, not a concern in the sense that if the Jew started and the non-Jew continues, so that's mutter. But Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rashba and others quote for Rabbeinu Chananel, that not a concern also means that I'm not worried that something went awry. I'm not worried that the non-Jew actually removed it from the fire before he hit Machal Ben Drusai and put it back on. If that would have happened, so we discussed last week, there was a total siluk, Kemanda Mancha Basilta, if you actually remove it from the fire and then put it back on, if the Jew put it on the first time but the Nachri puts it on the second time, so then those are two separate sessions of Bishul. And if the first session, the Jewish session of Bishul, did not get to Machal Ben Drusai, and it only crossed the Machal Ben Drusai line of the course of the second Bishul, which was totally Ayde Nachri, then that would talk of Biyaseh. So that's what Ben Chanal points out, that apparently there are two things we're not worried about here. We're not worried, number one, that the non-Jew switched it for a different piece of meat, non-kosher ingredients, and we're not worried that the non-Jew was masalik the meat and put the same meat back on. So that comes up here in Shulchan Aruch. So the Jew set it up, but leave the non-Jew in charge. The hafachbo, and the non-Jew was turning the meat. The non-Jew was stirring the pot. So I don't know whether or not there was a siluk. I left him in charge, and I come back. So I left him in charge. I left and went back. It could be the significance of the examples that the Brisa gave, going to the Beis HaKnesses, going to the Beis HaMechers, going to the Beis HaMedrash. So as the post can point out, the reason why Shach says in Sivka and Tezvav, who be'in she'in lachush bo she'echelifan ha'akum, came cuts for a post and poshidu. He points that Rishonim point out that the whole situation, number only mutter if you're not worried that he actually switched it for a different steak, and that's because he tells you to take a look at Siman Kuf Yud Ches, where that issue is discussed. and that's most likely because you're Yotzei V'Nichnas. If the Jew is in and out, and the non-Jew knows he's not supposed to be switching, and there's periodic spot checks, so that can solve your problem of Shema Hechelef. And that's perhaps why the Brisa went out of its way to explain where you're going. As you're going to the Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMedrash, Beis HaMerech, you're not traveling far away. The non-Jew knows that you're making a stop locally and coming back. So in terms of Shema Hechelef, in terms of non-kosher ingredients, it's a new piece of meat. So the Yotzei V'Nichnas is going to solve your problem. In terms of the Bishul Akum problem, so there, Yotzei V'Nichnas is not an issue. Non-Jew's not switching, he just may have taken a piece off for a moment, but entirely off, and then put it back on. And that would already create a Bishul Akum problem. So why is that mutter? So apparently, safik bishul akum is mutter. Rama says safik dvarim laakum v'chein kol safik bishul leakum v'chayotze bo mutter. It's a safik drabanim, and any safik in bishul akum v'chayotze bo or similar things, bishul akum is midrabanan. So safik laakum. The truth is, you saw that Rabbeinu Chananel himself really has a different argument to make. The reason why Suffolk is mutter is because there's no reason he would have switched it. There's nothing to gain. Ein lo hana. The concern of, did he switch it for a different piece of meat? Maybe he really liked the steak. Maybe he ate this steak. He was hungry. He ate the steak and he found something else afterwards. Either a less expensive cut or stop. He was hungry and then he found something afterwards. There could be a reason why he might be machlat. There's no reason, there's no gain, personal gain, and just taking it off the fire and putting it back on, if he knows what you'd rather it stay there. So, and that's the side, that's what the Beis Yosef points out. So there are two arguments to make. The reason why we're not worried about the Suffolk Sea Lake, the Suffolk Isser Bishalakum, number one, there's no reason to assume he would be Masalik, he has no ulterior motive. Number two, the general rule of Suffolk Drabanan Lahakam. Now, a couple of points about this. So number one, the Shach points out, the Bach, this takes us back to last Sif, the last Chabur, last couple of Sifim, the Bach had been under the assumption that this whole issue of Sea Lake is only if the Jew took it off, the non-Jew put it back on. The Bach came up with a theory, which is not widely accepted, that if the non-Jew takes it off and puts it back on, so then it remains Mutter. So Shach points out, Rabbeinu Chananel, anyone who comments that you see from here the Suffolk is mutter is clearly assuming had the non-Jew taka taken off and put it back on, it would be us. So the Shach works hard to Bach tries to explain the Shach quote why somehow it works with the Shita, but the Shach points out Pashtus is, that was earlier, Shach pointed out Pashtus we don't accept the Bach, the simple reading of all the Rishonim here, Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rashba, and so forth. If a Nachri would indeed have taken it off and put it back on, that would be a problem, but we're not worried about that, number one, because there's no reason to assume he did, which sounds like a rov or a chazaka de meikara or both. There's definitely no rov indicating that he did take it off. There's no reason why he would have, and maybe even the rov indicates otherwise, because why would he have done it? And certainly sounds that, or at the very least, there's no rov lesser, and there's a chazaka indicates lahata. It was here, we have no reason to assume it moved, and nothing driving us to assume he would have switched it. And then you have the Ramah giving, quoting the tour, that it's because of Suffolk Drabanan Lahakal. Now the Taz comments, the Chain called Suffolk, he says, Sheyesh Suffolk im Chita Yisrael Ba'ur Olo. Not just the Suffolk of did the Nachri take it off the fire and put it back on, it could be some other stuff. What's another example of Suffolk Bishalakam? So the Taz says, the Jew can't remember for sure if he stoked the fire or not. This actually came up earlier. In Siv Dalid, by the discussion about Shvacho Shalanu, one of the four arguments to be Matir, but Shvacho Shalanu, the Ramad quoted, you have it in the olden days when you had to constantly stoke the fire to keep it going before gas stoves. Most likely someone would have poked in the fire. Okay, so let's say you're talking not sure. Let's say it's not a rove, but that Siv Dalid been a rove. Let's say it's not a rove. You're really not sure if you poked or not. It's an open Suffolk Hashakel. I have no indication on the other. So Taz says, there's another example of Suffolk Bishalakim. The non-Jew put on the fire. I may or may not have poked the fire at some point while it was cooking. If I poked it, it's mutter. If I didn't poke it, so it was a totally non-Jewish act of Bishal Tzasser. So your Masupuk is mutter. Now, the significance of what the Taz is saying is, number one, that's a case where you need, that he's explained why you need the second reason. Why the tour have to point out, give a second reason that Suffolk Bishul Akum is mutter because of Suffolk and Lahakal? What's wrong with Rabbeinu Chananel's reason? There's no reason in the case of the Gemara. It's mutter based on, sounds like Cheskas Heter, and there's no reason to assume that the Nachri would have been Masalik. And the answer is because that's a reversed case. That's a case where it really is a Suffolk Hashakal. I may or may not have been Mechata. As a matter of fact, even more so. It starts life usser. In the case in the Gemara, the Jew had put it on. The question is, did the non-Jew make a treif? Was non-Jew masalik it? But the status quo before you left was that it was set up to be mutter because it was hiniach Yisrael. The case of the Taaz is hiniach Akum. And the question is, did you make it mutter? As a matter of fact, look, Chalkas Binyamin is a very pretty piece in the Beurim here. He suggests the following. He points out that the Ramah's language is interesting. He said, Safik Jervayim Lahakal, right? V'chein kol safik bishal akum v'chayotzei l'matar. Safik drabban l'hakol. And that's going to be true by any safik bishal akum v'chayotzei bo. And similar things. So number one, two questions on language Rama. Number one, you already told me safik drabban l'hakol. We've heard that principle before. Well-known principle, right? Go on Erevin and so on and so forth. So why did Rama have to say, and so too any other safik bishal akum? I understand, that's pretty obvious. You told me that we're being making this case of safik bishal akum, obviously be true for any safik bishal akum. So it seems redundant. Number two, what do you mean v'chayotze bo? Bishal akum and other similar cases. What do you mean by other similar cases? What category? You mean other dinim drabanan? Awkward way to put it. So the Chalkas Binyamin suggests the following. He suggests that we're actually, it's true that Safra Rabbanan Lahakal is a play, but it's actually something more than standard Safra Rabbanan Lahakal, because Achronim are not sure, would you say Safra Rabbanan Lahakal, but Makam Cheskas Iser? Interesting question. I know it was set up to be Aser, I may or may not have been Matur. So it's not self-evident that that case is necessarily going to be a classic case of Safra Rabbanan Lahakal. So he thinks, but at the very least here, we're mekel. Kayotsu would not mean all drabanans. It means specifically things like, he suggests, things that are based on chasnus. He says, maybe here, once again, the issue of chasnus rears its head, and this is less than a standard issa drabanan. Perhaps because it's merely chasnus as opposed to a real issa cheft machal sasuris. It may also be, as we saw in Sifta Zayin, it's a Isra Rabban Jisha'en Lo Shorish Min HaTorah. This is a low-level Isra Rabban also because it's not an extension of any Din Daraisa. So it may be that here, by Safik Pasakim, Safik Bishalakim, Safik Sheikharakim, and so on and so forth, maybe there's more room to Mekel on Safik. And that's maybe part of the significance of the Taz. Even a case where it was set up to be Aser, I'm not sure whether it's a Safik Im Hutar, not a Safik Im Nasar. It's not a Davar HaShavah. The starting point is us there. Here we're still more willing to make it because Bishal Akum is not only Drabbanan, but a low-level Drabbanan. Yeah. And on the other hand, one more point in this if Safik Drabbanan Lahakal is such a powerful reason, the second reason, the reason that the Ramah is quoting from the Torah, and perhaps it's particularly robust and expansive by Bishal Akum, so you might wonder, so what do we need the first reason for? Why didn't Rabbi Nachman just say, Saf Rabban Lakal, Shai, what do you have to tell me? Oh, because the Cheshbin, because here, Ein Loha, there's no reason to assume that he would have been Masalik. Why do you have to give that first reason for? Just jump right into what the Torah says. So the Chalak Zbiyam points out that on the one hand, the second reason of Sarf Ban Lahakal covers more cases, as the Taz points out. But on the other hand, the first reason is Matirit even Lechatchila. As one could also discuss, we probably would not encourage you to set up a situation, to choose a situation of Sarf Ban Lahakal. In the situation, it's a suffix, okay, Sarf Ban Lahakal. You probably don't look to set up a situation of Safra Rabban Lahakal if there's no need to. The language of the Gemara, though, was not im hiniach Yisrael tarara, it's mutter. The language that not the bidyavid language. If this case happened, it's fine. The language of the Gemara was lechatchila maniach Yisrael. A Jew can do the following. A good Jew can choose to do the following. Not just, oh, if you left the guy watching, then you realize, oops, don't worry, Safik Drabban Lahakal. No. You're allowed to do this L'chatchila. Why are you allowed to do this L'chatchila? That's what Lechem suggests, because of the first reason. Because it's more than merely a Safek HaShakel. Here there's actually, specifically in the case that Gemara describes, where the Jew already set it up, Jew already put on the fire, so that's better than just Safek HaShakel. That's actually, the Chazaka tells me it's Mutter, perhaps Rov tells me it's Mutter. There's no reason to assume the non-Jew would have asserted it. So in that situation, it's even Mutter to set up the case Lechatchila. And then the Ramah is going on to say, and that's what the Taz is expanding on, and bear in mind, in addition to this local specific cheshbon Rabbeinu Chanan had, that in the case of the Gemara, there's no reason to assume the non-Jew would have created a problem. We can assume most likely it's fine. The Ramah and Taz, based on the Torah, go on to say, and bear in mind, in general, in any Bishul Akum situation, once it comes up, you're going to say Safer Bar Lahakal, maybe a very strong type of Safer Bar Lahakal, even if it seems like it was going to be Aser, I'm not sure whether it was Hutar or not, even that will be Mutter, based on the way which we apply Safer Bar Lahakal in the world of Bishul Akum V'cha Yotzebo. So that's some of the issues in Sif Yudalf. Obviously, it can come up a fair amount, and it's important to remember that although we take Bishul Akum very seriously, Safer Bishul Akum is Lahakal. Now the Seifim Yud Beis and Yud Gimel, which also feed a little bit into Seifim Yud Dal and Tezvav, so Seifim Yud Beis and Yud Gimel are rooted in two Gemaras about salted fish. One is on Amud Aleph and one is on Amud Beis. So the Gemara on Amud Aleph, that's right at the very top of Amud Aleph. The Gemara says a dog and katana meluchim, the small salted fish, herring or something like that, they're mutter. And you could use them, even though you wanted to use them, and if a non-Jew took them and grilled them afterwards, grilled herring, fried herring, I'm not sure if that's a delicacy or not. Okay, take your pick, fried sardines. Dagen katana meluchim. So that's fish, those small fish already salted, and then nachri, they are mutter. And if the Nachri chose to afterwards grill them and make them even tastier, so they remain mutter. And then you have the discussion of Dag Maliach on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. So the two issues that come up here are on the one hand and on the other hand. The Malicha, the way that we've shown to pick apart the Gemaras, as you saw, so the two issues that come up. The second issue, which is already coming up in Amud Aleph, is that the salting is enough to be matir the subsequent grilling. The salt is enough to be matir subsequent bishul. Now, even though the fish usually is an item that's a bishul akum susceptible, it's bishul akum sensitive, but if it was already salted, if the non-Jew wasn't grilling raw herring, he was grilling salted herring, so that's mutter. It's the equivalent of nechal. Nechal kamo shu chai. If you want to be technical, you wouldn't call it nechal kamo shu chai. It wasn't eaten raw. It wasn't raw before. It was very salted. Okay, it was nechal machmas milchal. It was already, the way it was before the non-Jew cooked or grilled, it was already edible. An apple is mutter because a raw apple is edible. The herring, the grilled herring is mutter because raw herring is not edible, but it was already salted. It was already pickled. Right? So that was the way it was pre-grilling was already nechal. Whether nechal kemoshu chai, nechal machos milcho. So on the one hand, melicha accomplishes that. And then on the other hand, the melicha, although the melicha is matra subsequent bishul, the melicha itself is also mutter. I mean, the non-Jew is not melichas hagoy doesn't aser. And that's what's going on Amud Beis and perhaps also on Amud Aleph, that the Melichas Hagoy is not like Bishul Hagoy. And in terms of, let's talk a little about both of these. So you saw the Shulchan Aruch discusses, that's based on a point that the Rashba makes, that in terms of the issue of does subsequent grilling make count as bishul akum or no? Is rei nechal the way it was beforehand? So the Rashba differentiates between ketanim based on the Gemara between ketanim and gedolim. Right? So if you base dagim ketanim shemalacha in Yisrael, oh akum harein kemoshin is bashul makes us bishul. And slan akam acher came mutter. If you have salted herring, those are small fish. So if the guy takes a already salted herring and grills it, that's fine because it's already nechal as is before him. But if it's dagim meluchim gedolim, he took perhaps tuna. Tuna is actually pretty big. So you got salted tuna, and the nanja took salted tuna and grilled it, so that would be a problem. It's salted? The answer is no, because you take a small fish like herring and salt it, that's mamish, fully edible. You take a tuna and you salt it, it's necha aydeh atchak. What's necha aydeh atchak? That we already seen. Let's see from Yudalid and Tezvav as well. That certainly Tezvav. Tezvav was discussion about the dates, different types of dates. So if they're somewhat bitter, you could eat them raw, but they're going to be much sweeter if you grill them. So that's what he said in Sif Tezvah, based on Gemara and on Lama Chesma Beis. That's a problem. Either Nechachai, the only Nechachai Ayyadei Adchak. What Nechachai Ayyadei Adchak mean? It's really tough. So the way most posts can assume that that's a quantitative issue, not a qualitative issue. And most posts can assume it's not like, you know, if I was really, I had nothing to eat, I would eat it, but I normally wouldn't want to eat it that way. It instead has to do quantitatively with how many people eat it as is. That if only a small meat of people will eat it as is, there are people, 5% of the population is willing to eat these semi-sour dates raw. That's not good enough. You need a lot of people eating them. So necha de etchak means there's only a small percentage of the population who would eat it raw. That's not good enough. That's not called necha chai. That's sif yud tezvav. That might also be sif yud dalet. Sif yud dalet is the fact that beitza is also based on Gemara and Lamed Ches, next to Dag Maliach, Lamed Ches and Beis, that there is a problem bishul akam on eggs. What would be the havmi that we mutter? So that's a discussion. The havmi is mutter either because it's in a shell, so maybe I would have thought somehow that's makes it unsusceptible to Bishul Akam, Kamashwa, no. Or, as the Shulchan Aruch presents, Afal Pishiru Uyala Gomachaya, you could swallow the egg raw. Nechachai. But still, in Bishul Akam Asura. So why talk is Asur? Because only Nechachai, Adetchak. That's what's going on here in Sif Yud Beis as well. Yud Beis, Yud Dalet, Tezvav. Shulchan Aruch presents all three scenarios as Nechachai Adetchak, or Nechal Adet Milchal Adetchak. And that's not, Ali de Atchak is not good enough to matir the bishul. So if the non-Jew fried salted tuna, that's a problem. But if the non-Jew fried salted herring, that is mutter. That's what Rama makes very clear. Chayin kol davar, sif yud beis, shenecha chayin de Atchak. It's not just fish. Anything that is bikoshi edible raw, the Shachar is giving more examples, different types of nuts, that people generally only eat roasted. If you're really stuck, you would eat it raw. That is not going to be mutter. If the non-Jew roasts the chestnuts, which sounds like what he's talking about, then that's going to be the shalakim problem. And then the other issue, which is mentioned in passing in Sif Yud Beis and is the focus of Sif Yud Gimel, is the other point we made before, that the act of melicha is not a bishul akam. That is melichas hagoy. If the non-Jew made the herring, that's Jews don't have to salt their own herring. You can have the non-Jews salt the herring. You might have to have them, perhaps some sort of hashkacha to make sure all your ingredients are kosher. But the act of salting itself is not an act of bishul akam. Only bishul asas, but melicha is mutter. So one raya is from the case of the dag katan meluchim. If you assume that the implication is that the non-Jew had salted it, and that's the way Shulchan Aruch presents it. Begin of Sif Yud Beis. Shemelach and Yisrael o akum. It doesn't matter who salted the herring. Either way, it's going to be mutter. Another raya that you saw the Rishonim bring is from the Mishnah later. I think it's the Daf Lamed Tes. We have the series, we're in the middle of the second of three Mishnahs, and near the end of the second parak of Avodah Zarah. First Mishnah, I've given a list of items that you might get from a Nachri, which are Asr, even Bahana. Those are the items which have an Avodah Zarah connection, therefore have an Isra Hana. Right now, we're in the middle of the second Mishnah, Mishnah Lamed Hey, the items you would get from a Nachri, which are Asr, Bahila, but not Bahana. and Shalakim and Pasach and so on and so forth. Shlakos is on that list. Things which are Machalos Asuris, but not Avodah Zarah issue, and therefore not Asur Bahana. Then you have the third list, I believe the Mishnah is on Lamates, of things which you would get from Anachi which are Mutter. And that becomes, in large part, the focus of Zimin Kuf Yud, most of Kuf Yud Dalet. Beginning of Kuf Yud Dalet is about Shechar, but after the first Sifr too, most of Kuf Yud Dalet, which items you get from Anachri, they don't need Ashkacha. You get from Anachri, it's totally fine, as is. What was the unflavored coffee and extra virgin olive oil of the Tkufas HaTanan? They had a much longer list of things that don't require Ashkacha. One of the items the Mishnah has is Kivashim She'ein Darkum Lassus L'Sochan Yayin. If you have pickled items whose recipe does not in your society typically call for wine. The Mishnah Lamed Hay says if in your society there are particular items that usually are often will be that wine will be added to the pickling recipes, and obviously you have to the wine may be treif if it concerns treif ingredients. But if you know that in your society when they pickle chves, when they pickle eggplants, they don't put any wine in, they're no non-kosher ingredients. And this was before modern food chemistry, so it's much easier to know what ingredients were going into food. You knew which were your kosher susceptible items. So then we know the recipe for the pickled eggplants in this country. They don't put in wine, so no problem. So what do you mean no problems? Very nice, it doesn't have a non-kosher ingredient like wine, but the nachir is kovesh it. The nachir pickled it. Shouldn't the pickling be a problem? So zetman, that Kavishas Ha'akum is not the same as Bishal Akum. Now, just to back up a little bit, why would I have thought that Melichas Ha'akum or Kavishas Ha'akum would be Aser? And why would I have thought that Melicha and Kavisha are somehow connected to each other? So, a little bit of Yoridea background. I know some of you are learning Gid Anasha Kalabasar and some are not. But even if you're not yet learning Gid Anasha and Kalabasar, you probably know that if you take a piece of bacon and throw it into the chalent, and it continues to bubble, the chalent is all treif. Not only can you not eat the piece of bacon, you can't eat even a potato from the chalent. Why? Because tam ke'ikr. Because even though it's not besar behemah tameya, it's a potato, but it's a potato that was that absorbed the flavor of behemah tameya and tam ke'ikr. A potato as the flavor of pork is, if pork is usher, then potato, pork flavored potato is also usher. Now, but, okay, so that's the concept. There's a lot to talk about that. One of the dimensions of the discussion about Tom Kicker, practicality of Tom Kicker, is through what methods is Tom transferred? What moves flavor from bacon to potato? So we know that heat is a method of Tom transfer. You have a hot chalon pot on the fire. So that's kind of, and then you're cooking the pork and the beans together, so the beans will become treif. How about if you're not cooking anything? How about you just have cold beans? You put a slice of cold ham on cold, formerly kosher beans. But now what? No heat. Is there any other way that tam can be transferred? So the answer is yes. There are probably, if you, you work your way to survey the sugyas, there are probably a total of at least five different methods of tam transfer. We could talk about them at greater length perhaps some other time. But they are briefly. Number one is heat. Number two is kavush. Number three is melicha. The Gemara has a rule, kavush kemevushal, meliach kiroseach. If you soak, if I pickle ham and onions for a period of time, even if I leave it soaking in a bland liquid like water for 24 hours, we say kavash kemevushal. Just it's soaking is like cooking. Just like cooking will transfer flavor, so too soaking will transfer flavor. So if you have a cold soak for 24 hours, that's a method of tam transfer. You also say kavash kemevushal in the world of dal medium, those learning lulav hagazel. You let we say it also in terms of Hilchas Marar, it's in Yom Diyoma, not yet, but if you soak your Marar for too long, if you leave your lettuce soaking for 24 hours in water, or even perhaps a shorter period of time in vinegar, they say Kavosh Kemavushal, Kavosh is a problem. Mar, which is kavush, no longer kosher. So that's the principle of kavush kemevushal. I'm maliach kiroseach. And I have a very salty piece of treif meat, and I leave it in contact with some other food, the salt, even though it's cold, the salt will cause a transfer of flavor from the treif meat into the vegetable. Now the vegetable, even though I wash it off the surface, the vegetable, we understand, absorbed the flavor of the treif meat. And the two others, so that's so far two. Heat transfers flavor, kavush transfers flavor, salting transfers flavor. And the last two are less than 24 hours of soaking, but porous meat. You have a spongy piece of meat, so that'll even momentarily stick it into milk. So the Gemara says, yeah, we're not going to assume you can squeeze it all out. And finally is davar charef. You have a sharp food, and you cut it with a knife, or you poke it with a fork, so the combination of the sharpens the food and the pressure. So those are the five methods of tam transfer. So there is a principle, there's more to say about that some other time, but there is a principle of kavush kemevushel, is a principle of maliach kroseach. Tam transfer, kavush and maliach can transfer tam just as he does. So the chiddush is, yes, in terms of transfer of tam, kavush, and that's the language, kavush kemevushel, soaking is like cooking, maliach kroseach, a salty piece of meat is like a burning hot piece of meat. But it's not the case of Bas B'chalav, and for our purposes, after we get to Sim Pezayim, it only makes Bas B'chalav drop banan, it's not the same as mamash cooking. It may transfer flavor, but it doesn't create Bas B'chalav Daraisa. For our purposes, it does not create Bishal Akum. Yes, Kavish Kemavushal in some contexts. Yes, Maliach Kroseach in some contexts. But we don't say that if the Nachri pickled, it's as though he cooked. We don't say that if the Nachri salted, it's as though he fried. No. Bishal Akum is Dafka, heat, not other methods of food preparation, even those methods which are sort of like cooking. So that, those two, so the fact that kavush is eino kemevushal in the context of bishul akum, it's a mishnah. Kavush and shein dark melasa soch and yayin amurus. The fact that melicha is not kiroseach in the context of bishul akum, that's bavli. That's our gemara lamaches, right, with the dagim. Then the Rambam and the Rashba and the Ra in the back of the Gemara all point out, as Yerushalmi, that as a third method of food preparation, which is not a Bishul Akum problem, that is Ishum. Yerushalmi Nedarim, talking about in what context is Ishum not like Bishul or not like Bishul. Yerushalmi says, Yerushalmi leaves it as an open question, how about by Bishul Akum? So we assume that because of open question, safik drabanan lahakal. So we allow you, if a nachri smokes something, a nachri took kosher meat and smoked it, the nachri took kosher fish, he took salmon and smoked it, made it into lox, don't worry, that's not a problem. And that's sif yud gimel. Dag she melacha akum. Peros she ishnan, ad shechshirin lachila. The nachri salted, the nachri smoked, not a problem. That's not included. Maliach is not kiroseach in this context. In other contexts, we say maliach kiroseach. But in Bishul Akum, that equation does not hold. Mu'ushan eino kemevushal. We do not equate smoking to cooking in this context. And Rambam adds, and the same is true for kavush. Kavush eino kemevushal. All three. Gevaldik. Gevaldik. Yeah. Question is, Poskim discuss, and this is practical ramifications, there are two different types of smoking. And how many people here have ever smoked meat or fish? Okay. So you'll have to trust me, or even better, you can look it up afterwards. There are two different methods of, if you read packages of smoked foods carefully, you may sometimes notice a reference to cold smoked or hot smoked. Obviously, all smoke starts hot. Smoke comes from fire. But the question is, how tall is your smoking setup? As you can have a very small smoker where the smoke is still very hot when it hits the meat or the fish or the vegetables, whatever you're doing. Or you can have a cold smoker. We have a tall smokehouse. So the smoke, you know, the fire down below is obviously hot. But by the time the smoke wafts up to where the meat or fish are hanging, it's no longer Yad Soledes Bel. So then Poskim discussed, when we say that Ma'ushan is Eino Kemevushal, that if a ishun hanachri is mutter, is that only cold smoke? Is even hot smoking? And maliach and kavush are cold processes. Pickling, soaking, salting. The whole point is there's no heat. There's no heat. Okay, it's not bishul. It transfers tam, it has relevance elsewhere, but it's not bishul. So cold smoking, I believe, we have to talk to experts, I believe that most lox is cold smoked. Cold smoking is clearly eino kimavushal in the context of bishul akum. How about hot smoking? I have a small, tight smoker, and you're smoking a piece of brisket, and the smoke that's hitting the brisket is plenty hot. That's what you mean by mevushal. It's hot. It's hot. Well, why is it any different than cooking or baking or frying or grilling? So the argument that's made, this is a machlok saposkim. The argument that's made to be matir hot smoking is that it's a combination of two things. There's a reason why you're hot smoking instead of just grilling. It's because you want the food is becoming mukshar la'achila through a combination of the heat and the curing, the chemicals in the smoke. If you cold smoke, it's just the chemicals in the smoke that are curing the meat and making it edible. Much as salt will cure the meat of the fish and make it edible. So hot smoking is a blend of the curing and the heat. So that's what the post in debate. If it's a combination of both heat, the process involves heat and the acridity of the smoke, is that also mutter? Or the only time it's mutter is when it's when it's purely a cold smoke, it's purely the acridity. Then there are poskim, this is already even less accepted opinion. There are some poskim who thought that if you're matir hot smoking, maybe you can even be matir steam. What do you mean by steaming? How often do you steam vegetables? How often do you steam? The answer is plenty of the food that you eat has been steamed. Because the way modern canning plants work is if you open a can of food, you'll notice there's a little fraction of an inch of empty space on top. And the reason why it's there is because they cook the food in the can. They seal the cans with raw food, always in water. Why always in water? Because they cook it in the water after the cans are already sealed. They put the cans on a conveyor belt, and the can runs through a steam jacket. It's like a, I believe it's called a retort, perhaps. Like a, what's the best way to describe it? You know those toasters that some yeshiva dining room, I think, well, I don't know why your cap still has it, had for a while. You put, you know, it was like an ongoing conveyor belt. You put the bread on, and it goes to inside his hat. And there are two things you can play with. You can dial up or dial down the heat, and you can dial up or dial down the speed of the conveyor belt, which will impact how long it's inside. So you can a more elaborate version of that in a canning plant, where basically the cans are on a conveyor belt, and they run through the steam jacket. And the steam jacket, down below, is a boiler that's producing superheated steam. And the steam goes up and circulates through the steam jacket and comes back down. And that's the vehicle. Steam is a vehicle to bring the heat from the boiler up to the cans. And it'll heat the cans at evenly distributed heat because it's steam instead of direct application to the fire. That's how double boilers always work. And again, you dial, depending on whatever it is that you're canning, you'll pick the exact heat and you'll pick the speed of the conveyor belt, how long it's going to be in the steam jacket. And that's how canned food is cooked. So here's the question. Is that a bishul akum problem or not? In other words, assuming we discussed when we got started on the first chabur, I think Ray raised the question of if you're canning a food that's not bishul akum sensitive, let's say bizman hazeh, perhaps cranberry jelly is considered nechal chai because people eat craisins. So then I don't need bishul yisrael on the canned cranberry jelly, which means I don't have to have a Jew come by. The mashkiach doesn't have to be there for every single run to turn on the fire. Just a question of kosher ingredients. But if it's an item which is bishul akum sensitive, so then what? And look, you have to have a Jew there every time. Because to be economically speaking, it's much more labor intensive in terms of your hashkacha costs. Unless you say, maybe canning. Now we've learned Sif Yud-Gimel, our last Sif, in the order we're learning, our last Sif, and not every food preparation process is bishul akum sensitive. Okay, maybe canning is mutter. Because it's ayde kitur, through steam. Maybe that's like yishun. So that's a, I'm not sure, das yachid, but not at all a well-accepted, certainly a very much a miut, who think that even ayde steam is mutter. The steam raises other kashrus issues also, not for now, in terms of flavors of one canning different runs of different foods, is there a problem that you're using the same, reusing the same steam? That's a discussion for another time. But in terms of, is this a Bishul Akum sensitive process, there's a minority of poskim who say, look, it's like Ba'ushan. You're saying, yeah, the fire is down below, and you're sending up the steam. Of course, it's a very hard argument to make, because even if you're getting makel on hot smoking at least, the meat is being cured through a combination of heat and the acridity of the smoke. Here, there's no acridity to the steam. It's just a vehicle for the heat. The only way the argument you can make is maybe the reason why Mu'ushan is mutter is because it's indirect heat. It's not being heated directly by the heat of the fire. It's like a toldo sa'ur. The smoke is a vehicle to transmit the heat from the fire down below to the meat up above. So if you have that approach to understand why Mu'ushan is mutter, so then you could say, okay, it's the same as true with the steam. But that's not a widely accepted approach at all. And the vast majority of postings, I believe, assume that cooking, steaming is a Bishul Akum problem, and therefore you cannot just wholesale say that canned foods are never Bishul Akum because they're canned, because they're handled by steam. However, we are makel, and I'll leave you with this, we are makel, Poskim discuss microwaves, cooking all day microwave. Most of the time people use microwaves for reheating, that as we discussed in the last 2 weeks, reheating is, if it's edible, as we just discussed now, right? It's already cooked, and already got to machal ben drusai or more in the past, just to reheat a food that's already ready to eat is never a Bishul Akum problem. But let's say every once in a while you'll have a raw food that you will do in a microwave. Let's say you're given a hashkacha on a Dunkin' Donuts, and the eggs, I believe, are those egg discs are raw. And at least some of my Dunkin' Donuts microwave them. They're microwaving the eggs. Not that you have a bun that's already baked and I'm going to put in the microwave to warm it up. Not that I have a patty that's already pre-cooked, put in the microwave to warm it up. I'm putting raw food in the microwave. And I put raw eggs in the microwave and I'm going to eat it afterwards. So no one could discuss is that Roy Lal Shulchan Melachim or not, that presentation of eggs. It may be, you know, it may make for a great breakfast. Lav dafka is something that will be served at the shmorg at a respectful wedding. But even if you're going to argue that's considered to be ola al shulchan malachim, but halacha lamaisa, we preponderance of post can assume that microwaves are different enough from regular cooking. That is not a problem with Bishul Akum. Remember, the microwave does make the food hot. But this is much different than even steaming. There's nothing transmitting the heat. It's not a direct transmission of heat. As you know, right, the microwaves excite the molecules of water within the food, and they get warm from that excitation. But there's no heat source that's directly heating the food. And we assume halacha l'maisa that microwaving would not be a problem of Bishul Akum. Hadron Allah, Simon Kufir Gimel, Hadron Allah.